Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Truth seekers, a hearty welcome to you here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us tonight for Beneath the Surface here at WCAP, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Again, glad you could join us. We are here from 10 to 11 tonight, as we are every Monday night, delving beneath the surface on a topic important to you. And tonight's topic, what the hell? Does hell exist, and does anyone go there? That is tonight's topic. You can give us a call about this or any topic of your own at 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980 here on Beneath the Surface Radio. And let me introduce to you our guest for tonight, dressed in blue, Mr. John Tesaurus Tudorus. How are you, John?
Very good.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Give me one more adjective other than good.
Excellent.
All right, good. And of course, as usual, for Beneath the Surface, Cindy is behind the glass. Miss Cindy, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
You're okay? And, of course, you have a show after ours, as usual, tonight at 11 o'clock. And remind our audience what it's called.
Cindy's Vinyl Vault. We're going to have a theme show tonight.
CVV is having a theme show. What is your theme?
We're doing girls' names.
Girls' names?
Yes.
Oh, so songs that have girls' names as its title?
Yeah, like Elvira by Oakridge Boys. Eleanor by the Turtles.
How about Eleanor Rigby? That's a female's name. It has a last name. I just wanted to throw that one in.
What about Mandy?
Mandy?
Yes.
Yes. Can you think of any
Barry
others?
Manilow.
Gloria.
Gloria. How about Tell Laura I Love Her or something like that?
Think of Laura.
Oh, how about Barbara Ann by the Beach Boys?
Regent's Better.
Okay. You say so? I'm sure there are many others, but that sounds like a fun show. So after Beneath the Surface, rise above the surface and listen to some great music with women's names as the title. So, John, this is a topic that is, obviously, I gave a little humorous spin at the beginning, but it's a very serious... is there any more serious topic that you can think of?
Perhaps.
All right.
But it's also related to this.
Yes, yes, it is. It's
In fact, we covered it about a month ago.
What is the meaning of life? That's a serious topic, and it is directly related to this, right?
It is.
Because if you achieve by the life that you live, if you achieve the end or purpose of life, you have avoided hell.
Yes, you have.
In a nutshell, yeah. You have avoided hell. And because I guess the other place is the place where we are fully and completely alive.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so let's begin at the beginning catechetically. How's that for a word?
Yeah.
It's funny how you can say like catechetically and dogmatically, and right there you have the two domesticated pets that people have, cats and dogs.
Yes.
Catechetically.
I had not thought about that, but yeah. a natural punster like yourself,
that's right.
Clearly that would be on your mind.
I can't help it. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. So from the beginning, Jews, Christians, monotheistic religions in general, believe that this life is not all there is, that this is just a jumping point, if you will, towards eternal life. And a lot of people call it a test, analogies have been used as the womb to eternal life, and once we're born to eternal life, that is actually the day of our death. And hence many saints' days are celebrated not on the day of their birth, but actually on the day of their death, because it is seen to be their birthday into eternal life. So Christianity understands that by the way we live our life and the choices that we make with the help of God's grace, we end up for all eternity either in heaven or in hell.
In a nutshell, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, one is everlasting fulfillment, flourishing, happiness beyond the imagination. That's heaven. And the other is the exact opposite of misery, and that is everlasting hell.
Yes, I would say that's a good nutshell description of the two.
Now, if that be the case, and if this life is but a drop in the bucket of the ocean of eternity, then this is a very serious thing to think about at all times.
I don't know about it at all times, but at least enough that it's on the radar, as in, if hell exists,
yeah,
do I want to go there?
Right, and same with heaven. If heaven exists, do I... So then, if you understand the end that you choose, then you will live your life according to that end, right?
Ideally, yes, particularly if that end is a good end, and we recognize that is actually the best end.
Okay, so... To the more specific question relating to this show, does hell exist, and does anyone go there? Those are two specific, distinct questions. Of course, the second question depends on the first question being answered yes, because if hell doesn't exist, the second question means nothing. Does anyone go there?
And it's important to break them apart, because there are some who actually hold that hell exists, but that people generally don't go there, or the idea that if they do go there, it is only temporary. It's an idea called apokatastasis, which is somewhat famously or infamously associated with Origen, who would be considered an early church figure in the 200s.
Origen with an E-N, not an I-N.
That's correct.
Yeah, that was his name.
O-R-I-G-E-N, Origen.
Right. Let me, that's a good segue to what I wanted to get to begin this discussion. There's a couple of places in the same parable of the Last Judgment, the Gospel of Matthew chapter 25, that speaks about hell, and I just want to mention it here. In Matthew chapter 25, verse 34, after... the king separates the sheep from the goats. He says, then the king will, this is the quote, then the king will say to those in his right, come, you who are blessed by my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Now let's just stop right there. This is a, of course, a metaphor for heaven. The kingdom that was prepared for you from the foundation of the world. That tells me, and tell me if it tells you this, that it is God's positive will that every human being made in his image, it's his will that everybody be saved and come to a knowledge of that truth.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. His positive will that the purpose of our existence is not just to be in this life as we know it now, but actually something far greater. So to actually participate in life with him.
So in creating us, he prepared for us, and I'm quoting again, from the foundation of the world, this eternal kingdom.
Yes.
Okay, so that preparation was there from the beginning, corresponding to our very existence as his image and likeness, who he desires to have a relationship with, in union with us for all eternity. All right. So, but in the same parable, Matthew 25, verse 41, then he will, this is the quote, then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you accursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Now think about that. The first one, the eternal happiness, that kingdom of happiness was prepared for you human beings from the foundation of the world. However, the eternal misery, the eternal fire, was prepared for the devil and his angels. Any thoughts on that?
Well, yes, there's actually quite a few that come to mind.
Okay.
But first, I would have to, because I know right now we're kind of hitting this more from the angle of God revealing things to man, right? Because there's really two ways to approach this topic in general. There's the idea of God revealing to man what our destiny is and the higher questions, because really to a reason to some degree can get pretty high, but it can't quite get so high. Mm-hmm. And of course, God, as you noted here, desires it all be saved. And so since not everyone has a reason to get to a certain height, what he does is in his magnanimity, he actually gives us this information, not only that we don't have an ability to come to on our own, but also the stuff that we can come to through reason, because not everyone gets there through their reason. So for example, the heights of reason that someone like an Aristotle or a Plato or a Socrates might get to, very few people actually reach those heights on their own. And even when they do, there's a chance that there's going to be some degree of error. So that I just want to point out that right now we're coming at this from the viewpoint of God giving us information.
Divine revelation. Yeah. We'll get to human reason after this.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So from the standpoint of divine revelation,
yes.
As far as the nature of these fires, there is a certain speculation. So it's not something that we would call dogma. So certain things we're open to speculating. One such that I've heard, this was from Scott Hahn, is that the fires of hell are not just the love that people are meant to be in union with God being inversely put upon themselves. So this selfishness gone awry. But it's even more than that. Because that hell was prepared for the devil and his angels, a.k.a. Satan, and then all those who followed him, is that their natures become inverse. So if Satan is speculated to be of the highest order, the seraphim, the burning ones, so they were designed by their nature to have such burning love of God. But instead of communicating that love as it was meant to, instead, non serviat, I will not serve. And so what ends up happening is you have what is designed to be a very high degree of mature and perfect love inversely coming in onto itself. And so that nature that is designed to be burning fire, which is a good thing, instead becomes a fire of selfishness and hate and loathing. And that infects not just him, because remember, the nature of angels in their fallen state does not just go away. They keep their nature. Yes. God is so good that he honors...
So in other words, angels in hell, which we call demons, are still angelic beings.
They are still angelic beings. They still keep their intellect. They still keep their power. But what they do not have is what they refused, which is love of God. And so all that they are designed for was designed for to be compatible with love of God. They reject that. So
By their own free will, because angels have free will.
Exactly. Okay. They have free will. By their own free will, they reject that. And so what ends up happening is God actually, in his goodness and his mercy, allows them. He doesn't take away their life, which he could do, but he doesn't contradict himself. He designed them to be immortal beings. And so he does not take away that being, which is goodness itself. Instead, he allows them to accept the to basically keep it. Because think
accept the consequences of their acts.
Exactly.
Of their rejection of him.
Right. Because what is love, right? Yeah. Love requires a mutual giving of wills.
Yes.
And so if I go over and I say to a woman, well, I really love you, and she rejects it.
Yeah.
Well, if I force myself upon her, I'll probably go to jail for whatever it is that I do, because that's not real love, right?
Yeah.
But if it's real love and she reciprocates that, we might even get married.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a real relationship
there.
There's
a real honest-to-goodness relationship. Well, that's just analogous to the super-duper perfect high-degree relationship that God desires for between himself and his creation.
And particularly those that are persons.
Yes, particularly those that are persons.
Who have intellect and will and can freely say yes to God's invitation.
Yes.
Now, so you're saying, you're saying that two of his creatures that we know of, the angelic creature and the human creature, are persons.
Yes.
In as much as they have intellects and wills, and that will is free to choose to say either yes or no to God.
Yes, that is correct.
All right, so then you just talked about how angels, some of them said yes to God and others said no. And hence, God had to allow those that said no the ramifications eternally of their choice, because their choice is an eternal choice. They had perfect knowledge when they chose this. And those ramifications are... simply, when you cut yourself off from God, you cut yourself off from all life, joy, peace, hope, and all of those good things that we call love. And so that is the perhaps the primary elements of what hell is: eternal separation from all that is good, all that is hopeful, and all that is pure.
Yes.
Okay.
And then on that other point that I was bringing up on that part of speculation,
yes,
is that the angels keep their nature, so it's not just their intellect, but also their hierarchical order.
Mm.
So Satan, being at the top, still keeps that burning nature, but instead of it proceeding outward the way it's designed to be in a good way, it actually consumes upon himself in his selfishness, but also that in turn is communicated to the lower orders of the angelic. So the fires of hell, it is speculated by some,
okay,
for example, Scott Hahn
mentioned
this, that it's actually also part of the nature of Satan communicating that to the others.
Very interesting.
So they share in
so it's this, a hateful fire.
A hateful fire.
It's a burning, ugly, miserable, hateful fire.
Yes, but to a far more, shall we say, perfect hatefulness than anything we could really imagine.
Imagine, right?
Because of his degree of natural power.
All right. So in this parable in Matthew 25, he's talking about human beings, those that have rejected God and the seven corporal and spiritual works of mercy, and have chosen a life of selfishness. God says to them, "Depart from me, you accursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels." So those effects of Satan and hell that are already in place are going to be experienced by those human beings that have rejected God and his offer to us.
Correct. So first prepared
for all
the
eternity.
Devil and his angels,
yeah.
But then people who reject God, they would then also go to that place too. And because angels by their nature are higher than those of people, then in the, and again, in that sense of hierarchical order, it would stand to reason, again, this is theological speculation, that they also participate in those very same fires. So the fire of Satan consuming upon himself, and then that being communicated to the lower angels, rungs of angels, also is communicated to the human persons that also have the same destiny.
In one sense, those in hell, those human beings in hell, are under the power and under the thumb of the devil.
Yes.
In an analogous sense, they are here on earth when they live that kind of lifestyle, but it's eternally and fully the case in hell.
Much more so. And we know that, again, from Revelation, that hierarchy still remains. There is that accusation of Jesus and how he casts out demons by Beelzebul, and he says, how can house remain undivided? Mm. And, of course, there he's revealing that it's not just an order on the good side of nature, but even evil borrows from the same order that God created and cannot reject that order.
Yeah, it's and perhaps one of the worst things about it, not only the fact that you're absolutely miserable, and you know, there may be also physical manifestations of that misery in continuous pain and suffering, but there is no hope.
None.
This isn't you know, I'm doing my time for 25 years in the prison cell. There's no hope. There's zero hope of getting out of hell. Are being disheld, if you will.
Yes. And the reason why is because we have no matter at that point, at least in the state that we know. So angels, right? Angels have no matter by their nature. So time measures change in matter. Mm-hmm. If you're pure spirit, you're outside of time because you don't have anything that changes.
Well, that's true for devils and for the devil and his angels, but human beings at the end of history will be resurrected with their bodies.
But see, that's different though. There's a full actualization. So right now we associate time with change in matter, but if there is an actual resurrection where the potential of our material nature becomes actualized, has this perfect union with our spirit. We're not there now. So will time exist as it is now then at a second coming?
Probably be different.
Different,
yeah,
yes.
A different kind of time.
We don't know.
But the point is that body and soul, people will be in hell after the resurrection. It'll be a very ugly body and a very ugly soul, but at least they will continue to exist forever in this state of misery.
Yes.
And there's no hope, literally no hope in that.
Yes. You know what's very interesting, and I know you're not a big story guy, but I was listening recently about The Lord of the Rings and the creation of the orcs. And one of the proposals put forth by Tolkien was that the elves, which were almost conceived as kind of analogous to a pre-fallen Adam as far as like their... as compared to a fallen human.
Yeah.
So they have this certain natural power and glory and natural longevity. And then the orcs are basically this twisted fallen version of basically almost like a damned type of elf, if you will, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Okay.
And of course it's a story, but sometimes these things help put a sort of a visual on.
Okay.
On things.
Very good. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at Beneath the Surface. We're talking about the reality of hell. Not too many people think about it anymore, and I think that it's too unpleasant. We live in an age, John, where with politically correct language and thought patterns, we try to avoid and pretend and even deny the unpleasantries of reality. Hell certainly is number one on that list.
No. And some of that is a sort of a centuries-long overreaction. If you're looking at a pendulum swing from the hellfire and brimstone of our the early Puritan days of the United States in the colonial times, and there's sort of a pendulum swing to the other way to a gross caricature where it's actually completely avoided, even in circles where it's not traditionally avoided. Well, people want to know about the goodness and the beauty, which is true. But if someone is not aware of things to avoid, for example, a child, right? If a child's in the kitchen with their parents and they're around the stove, what does a parent do? Is they warn their child about what is hot, what is what can be dangerous. Now, there's good things. You cook things on the stove. It helps feed people. Knives have a certain function and purpose if used properly to help prepare that food. If you don't warn against the dangers, then you're almost guaranteed to get injured.
You can't enjoy the food if you're in the hospital injured.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jesus does the same thing. If you look throughout the New Testament, he speaks about and warns about hell continuously.
More than about twice as much as he talks about the glories of heaven.
Which is interesting. So he wants people to avoid falling into the pit because he knows the world, the flesh, and the devil are very easy to fall into and to give ourselves to if we were lazy spiritually and allowed ourselves to do that. But so in divine revelation, as we've talked about up until this point, there's every indication that hell exists as a place or a state of being that both angelic persons and human persons will spend an eternity in if they reject God with their lives and their choices. Why don't we take it from the standpoint of human reason? Suppose, John, you weren't all that religious. Could you, have others in history come to this notion or realization that there is justice after this life?
Yes, there is, at least to some degree. You'll get glimpses of it in some of the Greek myths, for example. You know, someone does something in this life, and then the gods either reward them or they punish them by transforming their form to some degree. Oh, this one did something good. We'll make him into a beautiful tree, right?
Mm.
Or this hero was so heroic. They somehow get to spend some time rocking, rolling. Nice. We got a commercial break.
Wait, why don't you finish your thought?
Or maybe they get to spend some time with the gods as a reward. Or, for example, the ancient Norse, they get Valhalla for the fallen heroes.
Yes. Do you know the name of the song, by the way? It's a highway to somewhere.
Highway to H-E double hockey sticks. Did you pick this one?
I did not pick this. This is all Cindy. Oh, it's Peter. Cindy's sidekick on Cindy's Vinyl Vault is here also. All right. Well, thank you, AC/DC, for reminding us that there is a highway to hell, and that is the rejection of God is that highway.
And the path is wide.
978-454-4980 is our phone number here at BTS Radio. 978-454-4980, WCAP. And along with John Tudoris, I'm Paul Marano. We will be right back with you. Stay with us.
Which way are you going, Billy? Can I go too?
I remember the song, Cindy.
Which way are you going, Billy?
Did Billy die? Get into an accident or something?
I go with you?
The song is about he's going the wrong way and he's heading towards the devil.
Ah.
Do you remember Terry Jacks?
Yes, I do.
So Terry Jacks was in a group called the Poppy Family with his sister, Susan Jacks, and they had this record.
Let's see.
I'm gonna miss you, Billy.
All right. It keeps going with this tune. All right. 978-454-4980 is the BTS hotline. Glad you could join us. We're here until 11 o'clock. On Beneath the Surface, I'm Paul Marano with my guest this week, Mr. John Tudoris, talking about hell. That's right. It is a hell of a topic, John.
I agree. It is definitely a H-E double sticks of a topic.
Amen. It is. You know what? It looks like we have a phone call, so let's get right to it without any further ado. Merwin from Billerica, you're up.
Yeah, this is just a quote I have.
Okay.
I said to God, what's it like to die? He said, it's as plain as the sea and the sky. Conception was him and me and you. He's talking about, all three of us. And when your batteries fade, we all just move on.
What is this quote from?
It's from one of my favorite songs, but it's a quote.
Okay. Okay, and what do you make of this quote? What do you think it says about the human condition?
Well, I think he's saying that, you know, he's in us, and the devil is too. And when your batteries fade, we all just move on, which means there's no hell, you know, there's no hell, there's no heaven. It's just us.
Then what do we move on to?
Well, that's a good question.
That's why I'm here.
I don't want to find out.
All right. Merwin, do you listen to Beneath the Surface a lot, or is this your first time?
No, I listen to this station all the time, especially Cindy's Vinyl Vault.
Ah, Cindy's Vinyl Vault. So we're sort of like warming up the seat for you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, at least you're listening
to us. Well, I don't know what you feel about that quote, but...
I tell you what, we'll talk about it behind your back, okay?
fine with me.
Thanks for calling, Merwin.
Yeah, okay, bye. All
right, bye-bye. John, your thoughts?
Well, actually, the quote does actually reveal some of the thoughts of some people here out there. You know, do we just go off into a nothingness, right? Do we have part devil? Do we have part God within us? And, of course... There's some truth in it, right? And even every bit of poetry has some truth. Every bit of even error has some truth in it.
Yeah.
And so what is the truth is that, yeah, people can do good. People can do evil.
Yes.
Right? But does that mean that we actually have God within us? Does it mean we actually have the devil who is a separate being in us? And people will substitute those terms for good and evil, right?
Right.
But they're different beings.
Yeah.
God who by reason we can conclude that is all-powerful, all-knowing, all-everything, and is the first cause of everything, whereas
sustains.
The devil is, although powerful, is a created being by that and is sustained by the all-powerful being. So clearly not a duality of equals.
Right, exactly. One is obviously infinite and eternal creator, and the other one is a limited finite being.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, when we also look at the natures of good and evil, right?
Yes.
So from reason, we know that the goodness is actually itself, the positive, and evil is not actually a thing in itself, but rather a privation, meaning
a privation of the good.
Of that good.
An absence of that good. Very good. So let's see. I want to use as a jumping point one of the sub, you could say, perhaps, presumptions of the quote that he mentioned, and that is this notion that human beings are purely material, and that when we die, when our body dies, it goes onto the ground, and it becomes, it breaks up and becomes part of the ground, and within a generation or two, we're forgotten. And that's pretty much all there is to existence. A lot of people, of course, have this notion of materialism, that's all there is, and life is rather meaningless past that. Is there, we understand what religion and divine revelation has told us about life after death, but how about just pure reason? Where does reason lead us? Where does logic and reason lead us regarding the immortality of the human being and the potentiality of life after death?
Sure. Well, one thing that comes to mind is the intellect, right?
Yeah.
There's no matter in our intellect.
Okay.
So, I mean, we think, where is our mind? I mean, sure, we know we all have a brain, right? But the brain's really almost like a material interface.
Yeah.
It's almost like the hardware of a computer, like a hard drive.
Yeah.
But really, the software itself... I mean, and of course, that I'm just using that as an analogy.
Sure.
But the idea that our mind itself is actually not contained per se within our matter.
So, in other words, the brain and the mind are two distinct things, even though one utilizes the other.
Exactly.
And the mind, you could literally touch the brain if you were a surgeon and you got underneath the skull. You can literally touch the brain. You can't touch the mind.
That is correct.
Because the mind is immaterial.
Very much immaterial.
Okay. So, and the mind creates immaterial things, right? Like thoughts and ideas.
Exactly.
They're real things, but they're not material things. You can't touch, smell, or taste an idea, yet you have one.
Exactly.
Okay. So then this immaterial component of the human person that we all experience, and by the way, free will is another thing, that we have this ability to rise above our physiological self to choose according to what we believe is good, true and good. So this intellect or mind and this freedom of will that I, and that's another mystery, the mystery of I or personhood, all of this immaterial component of us, you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, survives the physical bodily death.
Yes, and that's not just something that comes from a Christian or Judeo tradition. This actually goes even back to the ancient Greek philosophers.
Right, not outside of religion.
Outside of religion.
Yes.
This is even before the cultures even intersected with each other.
Right.
And had some meeting of mind, so to speak. I mean, it was very clear that history shows there's a clear separation, that there are these people who come to the conclusion through reason alone that the human soul, that one, humans have a soul.
Yes, they have an immaterial component that survives bodily death.
Yes, and that is by its nature immortal.
Yes.
When we die,
because it's not physical.
Soul. It's not physical.
So it doesn't break up and decompose and decay. Because it's spiritual, so it must continue to exist.
Exactly. Right. And so it must continue to exist. And of course, although some of the ancients like Aristotle don't get too much into what happens after it, it stands to reason that there must be some consequences of what happened in this life in the next. You cannot get something from nothing, right?
Let's stop there for a sec, because I just want to add to the great thinkers of the history of the world that virtually universally in the history of humanity, there has been a belief in life after death. We see this right from the get-go in cave paintings. We see it in pyramids. We see it in all of the ancestor worship religions in the world. And by the way, there are still many of them today. Even those, you know, those that haven't been introduced to Western religions of Judaism or Christianity or even Islam. These people intuitively, since the very beginning, have believed in a life after death for human beings.
They have, largely.
Now that's not logical proof. That's just a historical fact that could certainly point to something real.
Yes, that even if the conclusions that came up in these cultures was incorrect, the idea that people, one, have some sort of religiosity that plays into it, but also, two, that this idea is largely consistent in these cultures that something happens after our natural death.
So this is intuitive. We as a human race just understand this like we understand that the sun is going to come, the sun gives off heat. Before we had any scientific way of understanding that, we just knew it. Same thing with, it seems, life after death. Now, if you add religion to that, then you have, well, here are the, like you said, here are the details. you know, where one goes after death. Now, let's get back to heaven and hell. The idea that some people go to hell, is there any evidence, let me put it that way, if hell does exist, which we believe it does, is there any evidence at all that anyone has gone there?
Material evidence, no. Reasonable evidence, yes, and lots of it.
Give us a few examples.
One is that there's natural consequences for our actions in this life. And since our nature doesn't change in the next, it stands to reason that consequences in this life would also, our actions in this life would have consequences in the next.
Okay, so if you establish that there is a next life, which we have through human reason alone,
yes,
then it would be logical to say that the consequences that continue in the next life for us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The other is, and we'll bring up the notion that some people who disbelieve in the nature of a hell or that there is a God, they say, well, how can an all-loving or all-benevolent God condemn anyone to hell? In fact, I remember just recently, a few days ago, flipping through YouTube, and I saw this video, a little Q&A from Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's generally thought of to be a pretty smart guy. Except, you know, he basically had a very weak and poor answer. And it was his idea, well, you know, if, how can an all-benevolent God really condemn anyone to hell? It just didn't make sense to him. And part of the problem is that all the clear logic that he uses in his astrophysics, he completely abandons when asking the bigger questions.
Well, that what you just said is epidemic in our society today. People go on and get bachelor's and master's and doctor's degrees in the secular sciences, but when it comes to their own faith, they drop out after 6th, 7th, or 8th grade. And in that few years that they had religious training, it was done by people who hardly knew what they were talking about. So people do not take the big questions as seriously as they once used to in human history, because of perhaps because we've just gotten so materialistic that the pleasures of this world are what really matter to a lot of people.
To some degree. I mean, some of his answers indicate that he has some sort of hope that there is something greater out there.
Okay.
But he abandons that same consistent logic. And one of the things...
Why?
Part of it actually is, and this is a tangent, so I won't get into it too much, but in the history of science and reason and learning, there's a great big disconnect in the 1600s. That's a big watershed moment.
Yeah.
Some call it the Cartesian Revolution.
Yes.
Where instead of looking to see what truth is for the sake of truth itself, that people started looking at it from a more subjective standpoint. And one of the consequences of that is that there is the science of metaphysics. So to understand that science, it allows us to ask these big questions, but has the same type of reasonable roots in the natural sciences, is pulled out of the realm of science, and it's considered more of its little cubbyhole thing. You can just put it over in the corner. You don't have to worry about it
except
for a few niche people.
You don't think about it if you can't see it.
Exactly. And then instead of...
That seems pretty shallow.
Very shallow. And then instead of looking to explore these deeper questions, people opt for a certain certitude that they might have through mathematics or things that they can see or quantify.
And hence, today, you have the great divide. Either you are scientific and reasonable, a lot of people think, or you have faith in your religion. There is no middle ground that links the faith and reason together.
Yes, except that what they don't realize is that in order to answer those big questions, you have to be scientific, but your demonstrations are different. So you can't measure God in a lab because God is immaterial. Well, that's absurd that you would try and even do so. So what you have to use is reason and logic. You have to take those same type of principles that you built up in studying the natural world and say, okay, let me be consistent with that logic.
And continue the thinking.
Exactly.
And you follow reason past what the scientific method can possibly detect.
Exactly.
So reason enables us to see past what our senses can possibly see.
Yes, indeed.
And faith enables us to see past what reason can possibly see.
Yes, and I would also add to that even the natural sciences rely on faith. They rely on principles that cannot be proven but have to be accepted.
So the senses, human reason, and religious faith are, in a sense, rely upon each other and are interdependent on each other.
They are.
Because they are three avenues to the same truth that depend on each other to understand that truth more clearly.
Indeed.
Okay. All right. So then where are we going from there before we got on that important tangent?
So here we are. So how can an all-benevolent, all-loving God condemn anyone to hell? So the first part is, and we mentioned this earlier in the show, he doesn't.
Right.
We do.
Yes.
We do. Our choices are ratified. So with the angelic, they, because they are outside of time, they don't have matter, they don't experience change, they have this perfect infused knowledge. When they make a decision, that's it. They make it. They don't have the partial knowledge we have.
Right.
Everything's infused.
Theirs was an eternal decision.
Yes.
Yes.
When they were created, non serviat, I reject my creator. That's it.
Because we're physical and we mature through time, we are given that chance all the way up until the moment of our death, and then it becomes an eternal decision.
That's correct. That's correct. So at the moment of death, where our matter dies, and we're a disembodied soul at that point, we don't have time to change our decision.
Mm.
Whatever are the trajectory of our decisions were in life,
yes,
are ratified at the moment of death.
So can somebody, is it possible that somebody can have a deathbed conversion?
Yes.
All right.
But, and here is the big but, is don't bank on it.
Right.
At least for ourselves, right?
Because it might be possible, but it's highly improbable.
Exactly. We are creatures of habit.
Right.
Virtues put us on that upward trajectory towards choosing what is right and good, and being humble enough to know that we don't quite meet the standard, and to appeal to God's mercy,
yes,
because we know we don't meet it. And the same way, our vices. If we are caught in vices, that type of habitual behavior and thinking conditions us to say no.
Yeah.
I don't want you. I want these other things instead. And at the moment of our death, the likelihood that when we're in that state would actually choose God and reject all that is unlikely by its nature.
So,
by its nature.
So it's highly unlikely that somebody like Mother Teresa on her deathbed would choose to reject God and all that is good.
That is correct.
And it's highly unlikely that somebody who has lived an evil life, a selfish life their entire life, would do the opposite on their deathbed.
That's absolutely correct.
All right, let me give you a few names here and tell me what you think about this. Judas.
There's a high likelihood that he's in hell, but we don't know for sure.
How about that passage in the Bible where Jesus says it was
he went better, to his own place.
Better for him if he had never been born?
That's correct. That one, and then the one where John talks about how he went to his own place, which is indicative of him being in hell.
So these are indications, but not proofs.
Exactly. And the church, when she declares a certain dogma or doctrine, she does so in a very limited fashion.
But she does declare saints.
And she does.
When the church canonizes somebody, that is an infallible statement that this person is in heaven.
That's correct.
The church never does this for anybody who might be in hell.
That is correct. And in part because of also the admonition of Jesus. Judge not lest ye be judged. And here, of course, he's not talking about judgment of actions and of things, which we need for our right reason.
Sure.
He's
talking about judgment of culpability of
soul. Exactly,
of
the
soul.
State of our soul, because we still don't know. We don't
have
the vision of
God.
So
in that sense, somebody like, and I hate to use people's names, but since he just passed away, somebody who created the foundation of the sexual revolution in Playboy magazine, and that foundation continued to grow, and now we have a culture of death. Somebody who is one of those pioneers just passed away.
Hugh Hefner.
Yep. There was a very good article by Father what's his name? Father Dwight Longnecker.
Yes.
About and it was a provocative title. It says, "Is Hugh Hefner in hell?" Make a long story short, he says some very wise things in the article, but he says basically, we don't know, and we don't have the capacity to know. Only God knows who goes to heaven and hell, because only God knows how much knowledge there was in a person's choices and how much free will consent they had in doing these choices. So only God is privy to that knowledge. However,
we also bear responsibility for our own actions and choices with our own free will. So even though we don't have the full knowledge of God, if we're really honest with ourselves, we're responsible not only for the things that we do, but also for the things that we willingly don't do. So if, for example, if here I am in my, I'm trapped in a vice, and I recognize that there is a good that is better than the vice that I'm doing, and something that could actually allow me to get out of that vice, and I continue to say, no, I don't want that, and I don't want to explore it. I'd rather stay where I'm at. I'm responsible for my choice of rejecting it.
The theological terminology that you're speaking about is, how did you respond to grace? Right? If we are in sin, and then God gives us this little enlightenment or this little strength that enables us to get out of it, and we reject that grace, and we say, no, I'm too comfortable where I am, let me continue, that's a problem.
Yeah, and for using lay speak, for those who aren't familiar, you could almost say grace is God supplying what we lack to help us to get to where we ought to be.
Yes.
So here we are, our own reasons, our own habits and dispositions. It's almost like we're in a lockstep, like a military march, and it's really hard to get out of our own. And so God, in his goodness, actually gives us a little oomph, a little extra push, if you will, to say, look, I want to give you this little extra strength to do the things that will help you live a better life.
Do you think, and there's no way of you knowing this, but do you think most people go to heaven or hell?
That is an excellent question. It's an age-old one. Many people try to answer it, and I've thought about this recently, and I will say this. One is, if we are left to our natural devices based off of human reason alone, we would say that most people go to hell.
You would think so.
Yes. Here's the caveat on it.
Yes.
And I'm definitely not one of the people that say most people are not in hell and most people are saved. I think that's a very dangerous, dangerous position because it ignores the fact that we bear responsibility for our own decisions. However, and God honors that. Remember, because love requires consent of the will. So an all-loving God means that God honors our will.
Yes.
If we say no, he honors that. It's actually not only an act of love for him to honor that, but actually an act of mercy, because it would be worse for us if he forced us into heaven when we reject him.
Right. It seems like the early church believed most people went to hell. The modern church, or today's church, believed the exact opposite.
More of an apokatastasis similar to an origin.
And then there is the laity, the masses, who think that everybody goes to heaven today and don't even think about hell. You go to a funeral, and most likely you're going to hear that the person's in a better place.
Yep, because they're playing golf.
Because everyone goes to heaven.
And watching hee-haw.
So why this change in our perception of what's going on? Because it seems like more and more people who are caught up in our culture of death are missing the point of life today.
They are. And even some people who say they, you know, want to suck the marrow out of the bone of life, really get into it, they're still aiming at the lower things, the low fruit that's not even that good. The real marrow of life is, what is our ultimate end? If you're not asking that question, you're not looking at the map.
All right, bottom line, in one word or less, how do you avoid hell?
Appeal to God's mercy. Know that we're not perfect. Approach it with humility and say, God, I know I fall short. Help me.
Show me the way.
Show me the way.
Humility. That's the key, huh?
That is the key. Without it.
Humility and repentance.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. John Tudorus. Always a good show with you. Beneathing the Surface with me. Thank you all for listening to another edition of Beneath the Surface. Be with you again, 10 to 11, next Monday night. Different topic, different guest. Right now, Cindy's Vinyl Vaults. Have a great week, everyone.
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code REDBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.